Welcome to everyone. Thanks for being here today. We're continuing on with our arguments with the next case of Gail Holland versus Anthony L. Barney Limited. It's case number 84908-COA. I'm joined today by my colleagues, Judge Bonnie Bulla and Judge Deborah Westbrook. And we have Mr. Werbicki for the appellant. And also is Mr. Minson's here too. And Mr. Kirshner for the respondent. All right, Mr. Werbicki, would you like to reserve any of your 15 minutes for a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, I've asked for 5 minutes of reserve time.
5 minutes, okay. Hardly anybody finishes within their allotted time, but you'll get the warning lights. You decide how much longer to go after that.
Understood, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, this is a very interesting case, a number of legal issues in it, so the court thought it'd be appropriate to set this for argument. And counsel have already done a very good job, but we hope to hear more. All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice, judges, my name is Robert Werbicki on behalf of Gail Holland, the appellant in this matter. While this case is complex on its face, the more you look at it, the simpler it becomes. That's simply because of the key fact of this case is that in 2017, Holland and Green repurchased the Holland's home, the property issue.
Pull that microphone a little bit closer, please. Sure. When the fan comes on here, it tends to drown out voices.
Okay. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes.
Very good. In 2017, Holland Green repurchased Holland's home, the property at issue, from the bankruptcy trustee using exempt retirement funds for the repurchase. The bankruptcy court approved the repurchase of the property after the bankruptcy court ruled the retirement funds used were exempt from collection and from bankruptcy. Despite receiving the proceeds in 2020 from this purchase of the property, Barney now has double dipped by wresting control of Holland's home that she has already paid for with exempt funds. And despite the fact that Holland was ruled to have no knowledge of Green's activities regarding the Howard Trust assets, and despite the fact that all claims against her were dismissed by the bankruptcy court and she obtained a full discharge by the bankruptcy court, despite the fact that the bankruptcy trustee paid Holt Barney, Barney's predecessor, and the fact Barney sued to have Holt turn those funds over to him, Barney is claiming that the bankruptcy court did not have control over the property at issue. Yet since Barney received the benefits of the sale order and the judgment, Barney is now stopped from denying the validity of the sale order and the judgment.
Well, Mr. Werbicki, let me just interrupt you for a minute, because the bankruptcy court did permit the repurchase of the home, but the bankruptcy court also put an equitable lien on the home for the value, the entire value of the purchase price, but only on Mr. Green's share of the property. So even though the repurchase occurred, the equitable lien was placed. That never expired, did it?
It would have expired if it had been fully paid for through the payment from the trustee.
And there was probably some expectation by the bankruptcy court judge that that would happen. But was an accounting ever done?
I don't think the district court ever got to that particular issue, which might be a continuing question of fact down below, because the order itself is from the bankruptcy court judge is a little confusing on how that the proceeds are to be used and accounted for.
So the home was initially held by the Holland Green Trust. Is that family trust?
That's correct, Your Honor. And then
did the proceeds, once the home was repurchased by the bankruptcy court, did the home still remain in the family trust until the divorce proceedings?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that it did. Basically, at the sale order, it was sold to Holland and Green. It was not sent back to the Holland Green Trust.
So it was sold to them individually.
Correct. That is what the settlement statement and the which was incorporated into the bankruptcy order stated.
So then we go to the divorce proceedings, and at that time, then the family court transferred the title of the property to Ms. Holland.
Correct? That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
To Ms. Holland or to the trust?
To Ms. Holland. The divorce decree indicates that it went to Ms. Holland 100%.
So why did Ms. Holland exercise a quitclaim deed from the trust to herself after the divorce proceedings?
I am not sure of that. I would say that probably it goes to the maximum fear is a bad counselor. Probably trying to make sure that everything was transferred over, essentially executed a quitclaim deed, which really did nothing.
Because the repurchase of the property, as you have indicated, went to Holland and Green individually, not back to the family trust. Is that what you're telling us?
That's correct. That is what the statement, I'm sorry, that's what the settlement and the order, the sale order both indicate.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. So just to, let me back up. So since Barney received proceeds associated with that sale, he's now stopped from contesting the sale order and judgment. Basically, he's stopped from claiming that the bankruptcy court did not have jurisdiction over the property and the ability to dispose of that property pursuant to the bankruptcy code. If there was ever a question as to whether or not the sale order was valid, the right time to appeal that was then, not through a subsequent state court proceeding that effectively sought to overturn the bankruptcy court order, the sale order, and the judgment, which expressly stated that a constructive trust was not appropriate given the fact that the property was repurchased, and that the trustee would receive assets associated with that and distribute it to Holt on behalf of the Howard Trust.
What was the effect of the probate court's order way back at the beginning when it said to transfer all assets back to the trust?
In my understanding of the 2009 order, which wasn't part of the record, was basically that it just asked for him to make an accounting and to not disperse any more assets. Of course, he violated that, which would subject him to sanction, but there was nothing, like I indicated in the briefing, there's nothing about that subsequent order that made the assets any less stolen.
What about the turnover order entered November 28th, 2012?
By that point, the property was already purchased and was in the name of the Holland Green Trust. So the Howard Estate never held any interest in the property itself. So there was nothing for it to turn, nothing to turn over, at least as to the property itself. Also, the turnover order in 2012 was really dealt with a forfeiture order. Therefore, any benefits he derived would result in he was to transfer those over. The property itself, the important thing associated with that is no matter what happened with the probate orders, the fact that the bankruptcy court acquired jurisdiction in rem over that property and both ruled on the constructive trust, equitable lien, sale order, and other matters associated with that property meant that that court had jurisdiction. That court, if there was any question as to whether or not that court had jurisdiction, Barney or Holt had the requirement to either try and remove that property from bankruptcy early in the proceedings, basically saying this property shouldn't be here because he doesn't own any of it, therefore it's not part of the bankruptcy estate, or once the sale order occurred, because the sale orders are considered final. They're a very powerful tool for the bankruptcy trustee. And to raise doubts or questions about them would severely impact the ability to collect full value for assets in bankruptcy. So that sale order, if contested, should have been contested at the time.
So the fact that it wasn't contested, what do you draw from that? And what's the conclusion then?
That the bankruptcy court had jurisdiction, had the ability to transfer this property to Holland and Green, which it did, and they had the right to rely on it. In fact, 11 U.S.C. 363M basically indicates that unless appealed and stayed, the validity of the sale order can't be questioned if done in good faith. There's no indication that Gail Holland acted in any way in bad faith by acquiring the property using exempt bank retirement funds. Same thing actually with Green on the repurchase. Those exempt funds would have normally not been reachable by the bankruptcy trustee. The fact that he gave over those funds to purchase the property seemed to indicate that he had a good faith basis for doing so. And of course,
how did the district court exercise jurisdiction in the case that's now in front of us?
The district court,
if the bankruptcy court resolved everything, why was the district court even entertaining what happened here? I mean, we granted a stay on it, but
I'm not sure why the lower court attempted to exercise jurisdiction, unless it was an attempt basically to figure out what was happening with the equitable lien, because otherwise this is really an attempt to collect on a judgment and should have been treated that way. They could have tried to enforce against the property itself. Ms. Holland would have, claimed an exemption associated with it, and also claimed that, asked for an accounting associated with how the equitable lien would be resolved. But that didn't happen. Instead, the court, relying on a clear error of law, basically awarded the property to Barney, basically on a lien claim, which simply doesn't make sense. As a result, basically the transfer should be overturned, especially since NRCP 62 was violated. With that, I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Do you think Ms. Holland owes anything to Barney Limited?
I'm not sure at this point, Your Honor. I've taken a look at both the order and the underlying disbursement of funds, and it depends on a couple of different factors. Number one, the half, whether or not it's for the full value, 340 or 170, because it's only on his half of the property. Also, it depends on whether or not the order itself indicates that it was to be reduced dollar for dollar from any proceeds received from the joint bankruptcy. And they received at least $377,000. Therefore, if it's the 340 or 170 was the value, it should be completely wiped out. Therefore, no equitable lien continues to exist. However, if it was only from the portion of the sale, the 340, and the amount of funds got received from the trustee based on that alone, that's I think it's about a 60% recovery rate. So if it's 170, still paid. If it's 340, I'm not sure. There would have to be a determination.
So on remand, would you envision that these are questions of fact the district court would need to address?
I believe so, Your Honor. They still might be possible for summary judgment if those facts are become undisputed, but right now they're certainly not undisputed.
The district court would need to address that in the first instance.
Yes, Your Honor. Then I'll reserve the balance.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Jeremy Kirshner on behalf of the respondent in this action. Your Honor, the district court got it right. This was a uniform fraudulent transfer in the clearest sense. We had a judgment that was entered on March 1st of 2019. Within weeks after that, the single most valuable asset of the judgment debtor, Lloyd Green, was transferred away for a single dollar to Gail Holland, a property that, according to the quitclaim deed itself, was worth $398,000. Now, that judgment was supported by robust findings of fact from the bankruptcy court.
Before you get to that, did you just hear the argument? It was stated that this transfer meant nothing, that the transfer already happened through the family court.
Absolutely. And if we look at the language of the sale order, you will see no hint in the language of the sale order that there was a purchase of the property by Gail Holland and Green. Instead, it says that there is a purchase of the bankruptcy's estate interest, if any, in the property, and that all other questions of ownership were expressly reserved for the upcoming trial.
But the settlement agreement specifically allowed Holland and Green to take title to the property.
If you look at the quitclaim deed that was actually prepared, the quitclaim deed, the title rested in the name of the trust from that time.
But it did not, though, sir, because in the bankruptcy court judge allowed the repurchase. Now, it wasn't clear to me until we heard some information that the bankruptcy court allowed Mr. Green and Ms. Holland to hold the title individually after it allowed them to repurchase. So are you concerned about the fraudulent transfer occurring with the quitclaim deed that Ms. Holland executed?
Yes, Your Honor.
How is that somehow afoul of what the family court judge decided to allow her to have the entirety of the property to account for marital waste?
Because for a default divorce proceeding, first, you don't have an adjudication of other parties' rights. We had an equitable lien against the property at that time. There was also a judgment against Gloria Green at that time. You can't resolve creditor claims in a divorce proceeding when they're not a party to it, one. And two, we have to have a fair or adequate, we have to have adequate consideration for the transfer. Now, the cases that were previously cited for the divorce proceeding talked about contested divorce, where there was a separation of property after the parties fought over it, and that was the resolution. We didn't have that in this case. Gail O'Holland received the property from a judgment debtor.
So are you saying that default divorces aren't as valid as contested divorces based on resolution of a case?
I'm saying that a default divorce proceeding is not entitled to be deemed with the same level of preference that there was adequate, that there was adequate compensation for a transfer of property. Because otherwise you could have a judgment debtor who would simply file divorce, not show up, and have all the property that was subject to a judgment transferred over to a former spouse without any compensation.
Do you have any legal authority for that position?
Well, when I look back at the UFTA, Your Honor, asked any type of transaction under NRS 112-150 subsection 12, any type of transfer, whether direct, indirect, secured, unsecured, if the claim preexisted the transfer of the property from one person to the other, for a judgment debtor who's insolvent, and in this case we had a judgment debtor was insolvent, the check was there adequate compensation provided in exchange for that asset? And in the divorce proceeding, we say, did Lloyd Green get $398,000 or even half of that property in the divorce proceeding for the transfer? And we didn't see any transfer of funds to Lloyd Green. We had a property in Lloyd Green's hands, which had denied a homestead. It could not be homestead. It was fully subject to execution against for the judgment.
Well, the equitable lien may still have remained attached to the property.
Correct.
Even with the transfer.
Correct. And the equitable lien was actually at 100% of the value of the property because payment didn't actually occur until 2021, over a year after the transaction occurred.
Okay. So how do you derive the argument that the equitable lien was for the full amount of the judgment against Mr. Green? How do you reach that argument?
So the bankruptcy court's findings of facts, which are in the appendix, actually state specifically it was an equitable lien for the full value of the property. Now, that was a judgment that was for the judgment that was entered on March 1st of 2019.
The full value of the property being the $340,000.
Yes, the full value of the property. And that's the express finding of the bankruptcy court that we cited in our brief. And so the bankruptcy court, that ruling of the findings of fact and the judgment post-dated the sale order. So you have the sale order that happened earlier in time. You had the findings of fact that said, I'm giving you 100% equitable lien against the property. Now, what does that do? That says that if Gail Holland had an interest of 50% of that property at the time, the bankruptcy court wouldn't have awarded an equitable lien against the full value of the property. Those findings of fact in that judgment post-dated the sale order. So we actually get the bankruptcy court's interpretation of what its view of the sale order. And if you're giving, can I get some water, please?
Oh, absolutely. But the equitable lien would be for no more than the amount of the repurchase price of the property, which was $340,000.
No, according to bankruptcy court, the equitable lien that was awarded was for the full value of the property. Because 100% of the proceeds that were used to purchase it were traced back to stolen assets.
But that amount was $340,000, not the full amount of the judgment that the bankruptcy court imposed against Mr. Green. Is that correct?
The equitable lien was for the full value of the property. That's the exact word for word from the bankruptcy court.
What amount would that have been?
That would have been the full value of the property as it existed at that time when judgment was entered against it.
Which was the amount of $340,000.
No, we actually have from the quitclaim deed, which was executed 4 months later, that it had a value of over $398,000 at the time. So the equitable lien would have actually been more than $340,000. And I think from the equitable lien, because there was a tracing back from stolen property, when you purchase a property with stolen funds, you're entitled to that appreciation. So the equitable lien was meant to reflect that, in addition to the judgment as an additional remedy on top of it to be able to recover.
If a court imposes a constructive trust, but the bankruptcy court specifically rejected the imposition of the constructive trust in this case, isn't that correct?
Correct. The creditor or the debtor in this action was actually in the process of having his assets liquidated through the bankruptcy estate, and it was this transfer that occurred several months later after the judgment had been entered while the appeal was still pending, which prevented the liquidation of this asset, which is why there was a subsequent lawsuit that was based on the transaction transferring this to Gail Holland's name 4 months after judgment was entered.
Well, I'm sure you heard Mr. Werbicki's argument. He started off saying that this property was purchased with exempt funds, retirement funds. So essentially it's a new purchase. It's not a property owned by tainted funds at that moment in time. It's approved through the bankruptcy court as a new transaction.
It was purchased the estate's interest. That was clear from the record. And then when we look at how the bankruptcy court interpreted what that purchase meant, we look to its language of the awarding of the lien. If the bankruptcy court had the interpretation that this meant that Gail Holland had a 50% interest in the property, the language in the order and the findings of fact would have been the equitable lien up to Chloe Green's interest in the property. We don't see that in the findings of fact and the conclusions of law from the bankruptcy court. The bankruptcy court, in its order that postdated it, said for the full value of the property.
But didn't it also say on Green's share of the property?
No, Your Honor, it did not. Okay. That was actually one of the citations that we had in. We did a side-by-side comparison between the two of them. The bankruptcy court chose the language. It was against the full value of the property.
Where in the record is that?
In the record, 1 second, if I grab my brief, Your Honor. So, Your Honor, if we look this would be the appendix, page 566. This is Judge Landis being quoted. Under these circumstances, the court will impose an equitable lien on the Loma property up to the full value of that property. And that was on line 5-8. And that was the findings of facts that were incorporated into the judgment of the case.
What does the judgment say?
The judgment says, 1 second, Your Honor.
So you were just reading from the oral findings?
Yes.
Before it was reduced to judgment?
Yes, when the court specifically incorporated its findings of fact and conclusions of law in the judgment. And in the judgment itself, 1 moment.
We can let you come back to that since your time is elapsing. So if you want to wait till we conclude the argument here, ask for the citation in the record.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I would state the next part of the arguments we had was that we had an issue of claim preclusion and issue preclusion that were being presented. And as far as the claim preclusion, Your Honor, the transfer that occurred had not occurred prior to the bankruptcy judgment being entered. It was done on July 1st of 2019. As a result, it's a claim that could not have been brought in the prior action. The claim that this was transferred away from Goyd Green without adequate consideration did not exist. As a result, claim preclusion could not have applied. And specifically as to the issue preclusion of the sale order, we pointed out that in order for issue preclusion to apply for that specific order, we needed a finality requirement, and we had the order specifically reserving issues for the upcoming trial. And we actually had to have a determination of the ownership. And all we had was a purchase of the state's interest, if any. And it was a warning from the court that stated that you might be purchasing nothing at this point.
Mr. Krishner, nobody appealed the judgment of the bankruptcy court, correct?
Actually, there was a pending of appeal in the bankruptcy court, Your Honor.
The final judgment, I think?
Yes, there was. There was an appeal of the final judgment in the bankruptcy court. Actually, that appeal was joined by both Lloyd Green and Gail Holland 2 weeks after the judgment was entered. During the pendency of the appeal for that is when the divorce and then the transfer of the property occurred. And then after the property was transferred to Gail Holland, that appeal was dismissed, I think, approximately 6 weeks later, and I believe we cited that in our brief.
So the appeal was brought by Mr. Green and Ms. Holland, not by the Howard Trust or its beneficiaries?
The appeal was brought by Gail Holland and Lloyd Green in the bankruptcy case for the judgment from March 1st, 2019.
So let me be more specific then. The Howard Trust and its beneficiaries did not appeal the bankruptcy judgment.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So when the district court decided the order that's under appeal now, the appeal from the bankruptcy case was over?
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
Okay, so is that still a problem on claim preclusion then for finality purposes?
No, because when we look at claim preclusion and issue preclusion, I believe the standard is, did the set of the facts exist at the time that the complaint was filed? And it's based on when the complaint was actually filed, not when they were resolved. So the question is, did the issue or the claims that could have been brought in the original action, were they in existence at the time that that suit was brought? And that bankruptcy court was made up of two different types of claims. You had the non-dischargeability claims, and you also had the claims from the original district court action that was filed back in 2012, which had been removed from the bankruptcy court. So when we're looking at claim preclusion, issue preclusion, the question is, did the facts and circumstances exist at the time of the complaint, and could they have been brought by the parties? And what we're pointing out is that the transaction that occurred in July of 2019 could not have been brought in the prior action. In addition, even if we use the sale order as the benchmark of when it could have been brought, still it's not an action that should have been or could have been brought in the prior action, because we hadn't had a transfer for no compensation.
What is your position as to the conversion claims? I don't think those were addressed in the answering brief, were they?
I think that we acknowledge that the conversion claims cannot apply to real property.
So that is a concession?
Yes. Okay.
So do you believe that the family court had the authority to transfer the title of the Loma Portal property to Ms. Holland because of marital waste issues?
The question we have under the UFTA is whether the short answer is they have the ability to transfer property. Short answer is yes. But the question is under a UFTA claim, which is a creditor's rights to be able to recover assets that were transferred from a debtor without fair and adequate consideration, is whether that debtor can go after the asset, the person who received the asset, and get that compensation back. And that's what we have in this case.
Well, in this case, the bankruptcy court determined that an equitable lien was the appropriate remedy. You're not disputing that, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right. So if the equitable lien remains attached to the property, then that is a remedy that would be available to your client.
That is one remedy, but the UFTA doesn't require us to simply go after that remedy. The UFTA says that you can go after the asset, you can go after the proceeds of the asset, or you can go after the party.
But doesn't that undermine the bankruptcy court judge who had a 3-day trial on this issue and made a determination as to what equitable remedy would be appropriate under the facts and circumstances presented?
No, because the bankruptcy court did not have the July 1st, 2019 transfer, which transferred the asset that it had said could not be subject to a homestead. It was subject to general collections of the judgment and the equitable lien. It did not have those facts in front of it, so it did not rule on those.
But the bankruptcy court had already transferred the asset to both Holland and Green individually.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I don't think that either the sale order does not have that language in there. The later findings of fact and the judgment in it did not have that language in there. And we also have that the deed itself was executed by Gail Holland from the trust to herself individually afterwards. So when we look at the record and what's been developed just from the past, the prior findings of the bankruptcy court don't support that interpretation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, you can get back to us on that record site.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Okay.
All right, Mr. Werbicki, just under 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, the July 1st, 2019 quitclaim deed that was just referenced did not transfer the property from Green to Holland. Even the district court acknowledged that in argument. That would be AA 548, that the family court is the one that transferred the property to.
Did that create a new situation to put claim preclusion or issue preclusion to the side, because now we have another transfer?
We've got a transfer. The family court had jurisdiction over the property as well as an in rem matters. And by this point, the bankruptcy court had adjudicated that an equitable lien existed against the property, even though it had been transferred to Holland and Green. So that is probably issue. Well, I take that back. It's not issue preclusion against Barney, because he wasn't a participant in that proceeding. However, the equitable lien wasn't touched as a result of the proceeding. It passed through the proceeding untouched.
And also passed through the transfer as well, to the extent there was a quitclaim deed. Subject to the lien.
If there wasn't a transfer, yes, it would have been. And then the proceeds coming from the bankruptcy trustee would have reduced that equitable lien accordingly. An important thing I have to mention before we get done with this is that the judgment was never recorded against this property until after the transfer from the family court to Holland. And I was incorrect in my briefing stating that wasn't in the record. It actually is in the record. And it was recorded 10-1 of 20. That's when any judgment lien would have attached to any property Green held at the date of that recording. By then, the family court had transferred the property to Holland. As a result, there was nothing for that lien to attach to, at least with respect to the Loma property. So I can't really get through my conclusion, but
you can say your conclusion.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. This case cries out for reversal because of the injustice imposed on an innocent party, Gail Holland, despite being adjudicated innocent of any wrongdoing after a trial. The district court in this case wrongfully took Gail Holland's retirement home from her when she had already purchased that property with her exempt retirement funds from the bankruptcy trustee. The district court did this expressly relying on the thief analysis, a point of law which did not apply to Holland, who's never been adjudicated a thief of any kind. And that was both factually and legally incorrect as well as irrelevant. Further, the district court granted the property to Barney, who at best had a lien claim over the property, simply a basic error. Gail Holland respectfully requests that the court reverse the district court decision, order the return of her property to her, grant Gail Holland summary judgment, and remand the case for determination for damages associated with Barney's violation of NRCP 62. I thank the court very much.
That sounds like a different conclusion than what we heard at your first speech about what the remand should be.
And you've got a point, Your Honor. Actually, the summary judgment probably just needs to go back down for further determination.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Kirshner, do you have anything to add?
Very quickly, Your Honor. To answer the question, yes, inside of the judgment, it states that Lloyd Green had purchased the estate's interest from the bankruptcy estate, and it said that there was a lien, equitable lien imposed under Nevada law upon his interest in the Loma property. So, yes, that is there, and it also stated that he was the purchaser of the estate's interest from the bankruptcy estate in the judgment.
Where are you referring to in the record?
This is going to be AA254, the judgment.
You cut out a little bit. I just want to make sure that you indicated that it was on his interest in the property.
Yes, his interest in the property. And also further in, it says, as a result of the $340,000 settlement payment made by Glowy Green to purchase the estate's interest in the Loma property.
I just have one quick follow-up question. It appeared that Ms. Holland did put some of her own funds in to repurchase the Loma Portal property in the bankruptcy proceedings. Do you have any comment on that?
I would like to be able to speak as to what the breakdown was from the bankruptcy court, as to what the receipts were. I believe if we go back and we look after the bankruptcy court trustee took their attorney's fees, there was something in the range of about $160,000 to $170,000 from the total proceeds that would be attributed to Gail Holland out of the total purchase price.
Thank you.
So what if Ms. Holland hadn't bought the property in bankruptcy, the property that was at issue throughout the case? What if she bought a completely different Las Vegas property? Where would we be today?
If she bought a completely different Las Vegas property, we wouldn't be here today.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kirshner.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Werbicki also. Excellent argument from both sides. And Mr. Minson, thanks for being here too. This case has had a long history, and it's a very unfortunate situation for everyone. And so the court wanted to be very careful on how we approach this to make sure we're not missing anything and we're legally and factually correct on whatever we do. So this matter will be taken under submission. I can't tell you it's going to be a quick decision, but we're working diligently because we know how important it is and how long it's been going on. All right, stand submitted.